It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Good morning, everyone. This is a very important day for us, and as you know, I referenced temporal markers that our founders and our poets and others have used over time to place us in time, to emphasize the importance of time, because everything is about time, how we use it, mark it, and today is an important day, because today is the day that we name the managers, we go to the floor to pass the resolution to transmit the articles of impeachment to the Senate, and later in the day, when we have our engrossment, that we march those articles of impeachment to the United States Senate. As I've said, it's always been our founders, when they started, when in the course of human events it becomes necessary, when Abraham Lincoln 67 years ago. Thomas Paine, these are the times that try men's souls, the times that found us. Again and again, even our poets, Longfellow. Remember, listen, my children, and you will hear the midnight ride of Paul Revere on the 18th of April in 75. Hardly a man is now alive that remembers that famous day and year. It's always about marking history, using time. On December 18th, the House of Representatives impeached the President of the United States, an impeachment that will last forever. Since December 18th, there have been comments about when are we going to send the articles over. Well, we had hoped that the courtesy would be extended, that we would have seen what the process would be in the Senate. Short of that, that time has revealed many things since then. Time has been our friend.
All right, so that was kind of part of House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's statement yesterday before she signed the articles of impeachment and sent them over to the Senate. Sandy Rios with you this morning. Now, she said in part of her remarks that you didn't hear there that how somber this moment is, how very somber. But, you know, if you watch the whole thing, which I did most of it, she wasn't so somber. She's pretty happy, actually, when she was signing. She was gleeful. I think the take for me on her countenance was kind of like those old cartoons, you know, where the cat does really swallow the canary and then kind of smiles, that self-satisfied look. And so that was my take on that, the very somber, you know, Nancy Pelosi. It's reminded me of a very poorly done reality show. I've never seen her really... I don't think I've seen her present any worse than she did. She was stumbling over her words. She did odd gestures, which she often does, and she's trying to quote founding fathers. She's pointing to Washington, who's supposed to be above her, but we can't see it. So she's awkwardly pointing backwards and making all of these, quoting all these founding fathers that you just heard in there. She was surrounded by the 7 House managers that had been chosen, and the leader she's chosen to. Now, the managers are the ones who are the attorneys that they went over to the Senate, ceremonially walked over to deliver these articles after she signed it, and they're the ones that are going to be bringing the case. The House is like, again, the grand jury. They are supposed to gather all the evidence and present it to the jury. The Senate is supposed to be the jury, and that's where the breakdown is here. Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer and others want the Senate to be do the investigation. They want them to call witnesses, which I'm going to get to in just a second. But the House managers, again, she's chosen Adam Schiff to lead them, which is, and it really is ironic because last night on Jeopardy, Alex Trebek ask a question about Adam Schiff. He shows this huge picture of Adam Schiff on the board, and this is what it sounded like. Clip 12.
1/53 of California's House delegation is this Intelligence Committee chairman. His name is Adam Schiff.
This is in California, and nobody knows who Adam Schiff is with this picture. So, I mean, that's a whole other line of thought, but it's really a bizarre circumstance. This is the way I viewed it. Honestly, I just thought she was stumbling. She was ridiculous in her analogies. She wasn't as good and clever as she often is, and it did remind me of just a very poorly done reality show. But the media had a different view. I want you to hear. Clip 6.
There's a sacramental quality to this. There's a ritual.
I'm so glad Chris used the word ritual. There is something almost religious to it.
I think Pelosi's a real believer in this about ritual.
She said he's been impeached forever. They can never erase that. And
there's a sacramental statement for life. Mm-hmm. Like a priest for life is a perfect statement of what she is. I think she's very reverential.
She's so reverential that when she signed the articles of impeachment and sat down at the table like a president does when he signs a bill, and she's surrounded by the House managers, she signs with multiple pens. Did you see that part? I mean, she just kept signing it and signing it and signing it, and it was just sort of strange. Presidents do that sometimes, but she had a lot of pens there. Well, now we know as of this morning that the pens had her name on them, Nancy Pelosi. These are the pens then that were used to sign the articles of impeachment, and she was just gleeful as she's signing them. I mean, it was pretty amazing to me. Now, I wonder what those pens are going to be used for. I know that they have historic significance, but they probably have financial significance too. I haven't heard anyone say anything about that. I'm just wondering, you know, what happens with all of those pens with her name on it, as though she's the president signing some sort of an important bill. So she enjoyed that. It wasn't so somber for her. The House managers marched it over to the Senate, and as you heard in the news at the top of the show, AFR News, the Chief Justice will be coming to the Senate chambers today and swearing in the senators, and this trial will begin next Tuesday, and it might last up to 2 weeks, and the reason for that is because, as you heard Mrs. Pelosi say at the end of that statement, at the end of what we played, that we must have witnesses. We've been holding these impeachment articles over because we wanted the Senate to have witnesses. Now, I just explained it, but let me say again, this process is patterned after a court of law. It's not exactly a court of law, but it's patterned after it. And the House is supposed to be the grand jury hearing the evidence. They're supposed to gather all the evidence. That's what the House is supposed to do. And when they think they have enough evidence, they are to present it then to a jury, the Senate. Now, that bypasses, I realize it's not exact, but the Senate is the jury. So the attorneys, the accusing attorneys, will present the evidence in the Senate. And Chuck Schumer, Nancy Pelosi, and Gerald Nadler, who, by the way, what did Gerald Nadler say? The American people know that in a trial, you permit witnesses. You present the evidence. If the Senate doesn't permit the introduction of all relevant witnesses and all of the documents that the House wants to introduce because the House is the prosecutor here, then the Senate is engaging in an unconstitutional and disgusting cover-up. So they are insisting on witnesses. I don't know how they're going, how it's going on that. I'm not sure what's going to happen. We just don't know in the Senate. But the point is, it's not the Senate's place to do that. The House was supposed to do all that, call of the witnesses, and you will recall the reason they didn't do that because they said that President Trump was an imminent threat. He's an imminent threat to the 2020 election. He's already undermining the Constitution. We have to get these through quickly, and we don't have time to wait for the court to make a decision, so we can't hear all the witnesses. And now they want the Senate to hear all those witnesses. Well, there's a reason for that, and I think it's probably best explained by an article by Jonathan Turley. And this is what he writes. Jonathan Turley is a law professor from George Washington University. I think it's George Washington. I should know. And he's not a Republican, but he's an honest man. So Jonathan Turley writes, the Democratic leaders may soon learn the wisdom of Oscar Wilde's warning that when the gods wish to punish us, they answer our prayers. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi has so far delayed the submission of the impeachment of President Trump to the Senate to force a trial with witnesses. Chuck Schumer has declared any trial of Trump without witnesses to be nothing less than the most unfair impeachment trial in modern history. Leaders of both parties know that the impeachment often boils down to one unpredictable element, witnesses. For those who have the votes, witnesses are an unnecessary risk. For those who don't, they are an absolute necessity. On Friday, Schumer insisted that there is only one precedent that matters here, that never, never in the history of our country has there been an impeachment trial of the president where the Senate was denied the ability to hear from witnesses. That's what Schumer said. And Turley says, put in another way, Schumer does not have the votes and thus needs the witnesses. And then he goes on to talk about lacking the votes. Schumer's desperate for these witnesses, but only witnesses can only help up to a point. Schumer has opposed the suggestion that Republican witnesses. Schumer has opposed the suggested Republican witnesses as a mere distraction. They just want their witnesses. They don't want the Republicans to call them. One witness in particular could prove not just a distraction, but a disaster, and that's Hunter Biden. And Jonathan goes on to say that Hunter Biden, of course, was the focus of this because he really is. He's got a horrible past. He has an illegitimate child in Arkansas. He's has a long, long drug rap sheet. I haven't even told you all the things that Hunter Biden has been involved in. And he was placed on the board of this energy company, Burisma, and given hundreds of thousands of dollars. It's just it's really shameful. And that's what the president asked. He asked the president of Ukraine to look into this. So if Hunter Biden, he is really at the center of this case. But if he testifies, Jonathan Turley says, for the Democrats, witnesses are a dangerous game. The worse that Hunter Biden looks, the better Trump looks in raising the contract. In other words, raising the issue with the president. That is the problem with asking for witnesses in a Senate trial. They could take you to places you might prefer not to go. Well, that's what the Democrats are banking on, but they're wanting it to go their way. And they're not sure, but that's all they have because they don't have the votes, just so you know. So Nancy Pelosi, you might remember, I don't have time to play this clip, but yet last night, no, 2 nights ago on Special Report, there was suddenly out of the blue this report that a cybersecurity firm, that the Russians had hacked Burisma. And that they'd authorized this huge hacking, and I forgot what the rest of the report said. And when they started reporting that, it was a long report. I didn't play it for you yesterday because we ran out of time, but I thought, wait a second. This is a very convenient story for the Democrats, that suddenly the Russians are hacking in, you know, terrible Russians, no good Russians, are hacking into Burisma, where Hunter Biden is on the board, and Burisma that's supposedly so corrupt, according to the Republicans. That's just really a very convenient story, which so now. So this morning, the headline from the Daily Caller is a cybersecurity firm responsible for a report on Russia hacking Burisma has ties to the 2016 DNC hacks. The cybersecurity firm responsible for a report Monday suggesting Russia hacked into Burisma Holdings is representing half of the 2020 presidential candidates. It's called Area One. That's the company. And its co-founder previously worked with CrowdStrike. That's that cybersecurity organization that went into the DNC's email. And that's who the Democrats chose to go in, did not allow the FBI to go in to determine who hacked their computers. Remember that? That was CrowdStrike. So this is another one of the group's co-founders donated money to Elizabeth Warren's presidential campaign. And so you see how this goes. Oh, there's so much to tell you this morning, and we are going to open the phone lines about a lot of things. So I hope you'll stay tuned. Also, let me just say that we are all full throat into helping preborn, you know, provide ultrasounds for women who find themselves in crisis pregnancies, whether they're teenagers or older women or women, single women with multiple children, whatever you fill in the blank, or health problems. And so Preborn provides these ultrasounds so moms can see their babies and make an informed decision about what they should do and what it means if they actually terminate this life. If you'd like to help, it's 877-616-2396. That's 877-616-2396. Stay tuned. There's so much more. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
That changed my life. Just from that ultrasound picture?
When it comes to choice,
The Ministry of Preborn offers the ultimate life-saving choice by providing a free ultrasound. When an abortion-minded woman sees her baby on ultrasound and hears the heartbeat, she's 80% more likely to choose life.
I'm going to keep my baby, and I'm going to keep growing, and I'm going to be a great mom.
Preborn is the largest provider of free ultrasounds in the country, and their mission is to help save babies' lives and souls through love and compassion and the message of Jesus Christ. To find out more, go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com. Or dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 and say baby. Your love can save a life.
Here's an amazing story about a jihadist coming to Christ. Hi, it's Michael Woolworth with Bible League International, and we've been engaging the world with God's Word since 1938 for only $5 a Bible. I met young Ahmed, a 14-year-old Syrian refugee in the Middle East who was radicalized and primed to be a suicide bomber. His mother became a believer and prayed nonstop for his salvation. When Ahmed came to Christ, he was beaten severely and threatened with death before leading dozens of jihadists to new life in Christ. You know, by having his own Bible, Ahmed can understand why he's hated for following Jesus, and he's able to endure hardship, persevere in the faith, and turn many hearts to the Prince of Peace. This Christmas, these new Christians are praying for their very own Bible to read for themselves how the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. Learn how you can make a difference at sendbiblesnow.com. That's sendbiblesnow.com or by calling 800-YES-WORD, 800-YES-WORD.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next. Hi, this is Todd Starnes, and folks, Liberty University believes a private Christian education should be affordable to everyone. That's great, right? It doesn't matter if you're from California or Maine or anywhere in between, you may qualify for up to $20,780 over 4 years through Liberty's Middle America Scholarship. For more information, text MAS to the number 839-858 today. Again, that's MAS to the number 839-858. A Bernie Sanders campaign staffer was captured on secret video suggesting Trump supporters and wealthy Americans should be sent to gulags where they could be re-educated. The video is posted on ToddStarnes.com, and it is absolutely chilling, folks. The staffer goes on to say the only way to deal with Trump supporters is through acts of violence. He also warned if Sanders does not receive the Democratic nomination, Milwaukee will burn. The Democrats are holding their convention in that city. Folks, we are dealing with a clear and present danger to the Republic. In my new book, Culture Jihad, I warn the nation about the rise of socialism in the United States. A number of well-respected polls show a majority of young Americans, Generation Z, millennials, favor socialism over capitalism. And if we do not rise up and reclaim our local public schools, there's a very real possibility that many of us could spend our twilight years in one of those gulags. I'm Todd Starnes.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
The history of this moment as a student of American history, people are going to be studying this for a long time.
Just the ceremony of it, walking over, delivering the articles of impeachment.
The House clerk right now appears to still be holding on to the articles of impeachment from what we can tell from the cameras right there.
Through the rotunda. Through Statuary Hall, back to the House of Representatives.
And just thinking about the history that they're walking through.
This is history, Nia. This is history unfolding.
There's a sacramental quality to this. There's a ritual.
I'm so glad Chris used the word ritual, because that's the word that has been stuck in my head about this all day today. There is something almost religious to it.
And I think Pelosi's a real believer in this, about ritual.
She said he's been impeached forever. They can never erase that.
And there's a sacramental statement for life. Like a priest for life is a perfect statement of what she is. I think she's very reverential.
A lot of members felt, and they told me as they were waiting, that this was an historic moment they didn't want to miss.
One of the things these senators are going to have to think about is, what do they want us to think about when we look at their portrait?
portrait, or, and some of them might think there will be actual statues that we will someday walk by.
The building is filled with statues to remind us of people who were the great people before us. I think there's also something about the sort of the excommunication aspect of this thing. In French, the French Revolution, did the guy getting his head taken off hear the drum roll? Why is there a drum roll? Why is there so much ritual in life?
Yes. Okay. So the media, that's their description of what happened yesterday. Very different from my view of what happened yesterday. Ted Cruz made a statement. He said, at last, the circus in the House is over. And indeed, it has been a circus. It really has been probably worse than a bad reality show. A circus is probably a better description. And he went on to say, you know, the question that the media needs to ask is they keep asking Republican senators if they will, you know, uphold their oath of office in the proceeding. Will they swear? They're taking an oath to be impartial today sometime with Chief Justice John Roberts presiding. And so they constantly are saying, will the Republicans uphold their oath? Will they uphold their oath? But they don't ask the Democrats if they will uphold their oath. How about the Democrats that are running for president against President Trump? Will they uphold their oath to be, you know, impartial? So, but they never ask that question, and that's Ted Cruz's point. Meanwhile, the business of governing is going on one way or another. The China deal was signed yesterday on the other side of the Capitol or at the White House. He signed a deal, the first agreement with China, the first part of many. And my understanding is that it's really good for American farmers, and it's very good for us in terms of if China holds to their word here. A lot of provisions on intellectual property rights, on not stealing, on, you know, sort of being an actor on the world stage in trade that is honest, at least more honest, trying to rope them in to make them not so lawless that people cannot trade with them. And they're agreeing to this. So that was signed, and that was a big victory. The stock market went crazy. So it's just like a parallel universe, isn't it? Meanwhile, the House is scheduled, I think this will be in the Senate this morning. They're going to be passing the Mexico-Canada agreement. Canada has not signed it yet, but Mexico has. So it won't go into effect until Canada agrees. You wonder if Justin Trudeau will sign. He's just, he's so peaky. Peak is the word I can think of. You know, he was blaming President Trump for the downing of that Ukrainian liner, but the shooting down by Iran and the killing of 60-some Canadians. He indicated he thought it was President Trump's fault. It's just pretty disgusting. So we'll see if he actually signs that. But that's what the Congress is trying to do. The China trade deal was signed, and then the Canada-Mexico agreement was signed. Oh, but the Democrats did other things. They blocked a vote to support the Iranian protesters. It was a resolution that would have condemned the government of Iran for killing 1,500 Iranian citizens who were protesting their government, as well as condemned the government of Iran for shooting down Ukraine International Airlines Flight 752, killing 176 people. It also condemns the government of Iran for repeatedly lying to its people about that flight, calls on the government of Iran to refrain from the use of violence, protect the rights and freedoms of expression and peaceful assembly, and support the protesters in Iran, their demands for accountability, and their desire for freedom and human rights. Okay, so this was the resolution. The Democrats voted it down. Nancy Pelosi, who's all about, you know, justice and the founding fathers and all those quotes, not so much about the standing in solidarity with the Iranian protesters. So I got an email from Kim, and she said, I think it's Kim as a girl. Kim said she listened to the show last Thursday, tried to get through, and ran out of time. We ran out of time. I'm sorry you didn't get through, Kim. I hope that you'll call again. I'm sorry you weren't first up, actually, because this is what she says. From listening to you and your callers, it never ceases to amaze and sadden me how Christians in America have now become Christendom, fallen from the Constantinian shift, gotten in bed with the state, given up the biblical mandate to be ambassadors, and instead become advocates, apologists, and literally the mouthpiece for the Leviathan. Okay, so Kim's talking about Constantine, who was the first Christian pope, and he forced the Romans to become Christians. And it wasn't a matter of free conversion. It was a dictate from the Caesar. And so they did lose in time. I mean, sure, some were sincere, but many were not. And it became sort of it was the beginning of the definition of a whole group of people as Christian that was really separate from how they actually behaved and thought and how they felt about Scripture and any kind of knowledge or relationship with God through Jesus Christ. So So that's what she's talking about. And it was called Christendom by the Muslims. So I just wanted you to catch that. So she says, we have now become Christendom, like Rome. Fallen for the Constantinian, Emperor Constantine shift, gotten into bed with the state, given up the biblical mandate to be ambassadors, and instead become advocates, apologists, and literally the mouthpiece for Leviathan. I started taking some notes while I was on hold last Thursday, and these are some of the things I heard you say or agree with your listeners, callers, saying regarding Iraq, which means people who live... Okay, this is important. I'm going to read this more clearly. And I heard you say and agree with your listeners, callers, saying regarding Iran, which means people who live in the land of Iran, quote, we need to hurt them, cripple them, take them out, stop evil. Our enemies must be killed. That last comment made me think how different that was from what I read in an old book, something about loving our enemies. It is no wonder that the church in America has lost her first love, lost her power, and lost the next generation. Well, let me just stop to interject, Kim. First of all, no one that I know of that called in last Thursday said that we need to refer to the people who live in the land of Iran as enemies that must be killed, cripple them, take them out, stop evil. The conversation is always about the Islamists, the radical embracees of the Mohammedan text that believe that you should kill all people that are not Muslim or force them to convert. That's what we're talking about. I think that's clear. Maybe you don't. I have a feeling you don't listen often, Kim. That's my impression. But I don't think anybody said that. As a matter of fact. And I certainly didn't agree that all the people who live in the land of Iran should be killed. That's sort of silly. You know, it's interesting. You're smooth, and you're actually pretty smug, Kim, but you're wrong. You know, you can have a lot of knowledge and have absolutely no understanding of how to apply it. You put a twist on your words, and I don't know if you mean to do that, but or if that's just really the way you think. Let me go on. You say that it's no wonder the church in America has lost her first love, her first power, and lost the next generation. You say in this that you remember this old book that said loving your enemies. Well, you know, you do understand, I hope, Kim, that loving our enemies is a personal admonition from Jesus to us, and also one of the commandments. But it doesn't have to do with the state. Romans 13 makes it very clear that that governments and entities that govern or, you know, run the world, presidents, kings, whatever, they are ordained by God, even if they're not Christian. They are ordained by God, according to Romans 13, to keep order. And it also goes further to say that they do not wield the sword for nothing. So it's expected that governments and their armies and their powers are there to bring justice. That's what Romans 13 says. Of course, they don't all bring justice. Some are cruel. But that was the intent, that there would be order. And so God has laid that down. That's a very different thing than the personal admonition for Christians and people of the book to personally love your enemies. So we understand that the state must carry out protection of the people. And sometimes we do, too. I think love your enemies never requires us to let them slaughter our children. I just can't, you know, that's like, it's a subtle but very important distinction, but it's very important. You know, I'm thinking, this reminded me of a clip that I did not play yet, but I want to. It's about, it's from Congressman Brian Mast. He was testifying before the council. He was testifying before a committee in the House, and it was a bunch of foreign policy experts. And the chairman was Representative Elliot Engel of New York. So he was testifying before or asking questions of the president of the Council on Foreign Relations, senior. There's a lot of people here. I don't even have time to read all of them, but they're all very, you know, erudite. They're your kind of people. I'm thinking. So they're sitting in front of him there giving their testimony about what's bad about the president taking out Soleimani. And Brian Mast, who is a double amputee from the war, piped in with this exchange. Let's listen.
Now I want to ask a question. Some people might call this rhetorical, but I'm not going to ask it as rhetorical. There's a number of my colleagues still remaining here. I am more than willing to yield to any of my colleagues that want to answer this question. If you walk out this hallway and you take a right and another right, you're going to come to a several beautiful walls that have the names of our fallen service members from the War on Terror. And I would ask, can any of you provide me one name on that wall that doesn't justify killing Soleimani? I got 2 minutes and 30 seconds. I'll be more than happy to sit here and wait. Somebody provide me with a name on that wall that does not justify his killing.
Well, the gentleman may continue.
I'm continuing, Mr. Chairman. I got 2 minutes remaining. I will sit here and wait for somebody to provide me with a name on that wall that does not justify the killing of Soleimani.
Thank you, Mr. Mass. I think you've made your point. Mr. Phillips.
Mr. Chairman, I have not yielded back my time, and I still have a minute and 45 seconds.
You're disrupting the procedures.
I will not yield back my time, Mr. Chairman.
You're disrupting.
I have a minute and 45 seconds remaining, of which I would like to wait for somebody to provide me with a name of somebody on our memorial wall who does not justify the killing of Soleimani.
You are out of order.
I will not yield back my time.
You are out of order, Mr. Mass.
All right, I wanted you to hear that there. So he does not yield, and the thing goes on for two minutes and 30 seconds, and none of those foreign policy experts can say a word, can answer his question. Brian Mast, a congressman from Florida who lost both of his legs and one of his fingers when an IUD was planted in a road in Kandahar, Afghanistan. And who was responsible for those IUDs? It was Soleimani. So you can sit with your pontifications about what it means to be a Christian. The state has an obligation to kill the enemies of the country if they are attacking Americans. Soleimani was responsible for that. I have no compunction that he should have been killed by the state. Not that I personally pull the trigger, or that many of my listeners, because we don't have that power or authority, but the state does. And so, yeah, that's the way I come down. So then one more thing, Kim says, Upton Sinclair said, it is difficult to get a man or woman to understand something when his salary depends upon his not understanding it. So her point is that when she listens to this show or AFR, she says we're making money holding this opinion. So I think, Kim, that's just laughable. I've been accused of that through the years often, you know, that I'm making big money doing what I'm doing. And I just have to laugh, because if you knew the story about that part of my life, you might laugh too, actually. But I appreciate you listening. I hope you call in. But, Kim, you are smug, and you know a lot of things, but I think you lack wisdom. And, by the way, God's power will not be thwarted in spite of whatever apostasy you might be guilty of, or me either. God will remain true, and he's powerful. He is not stopped by our fecklessness or our ridiculousness or lack of understanding of his word. And he will not be stopped, and he will have his way in the next generation too. So I'm just to make that point. All right. I want to go back to one other email that I got this morning. This is from Shirley. I think, Shirley, you're the one that calls in from Tennessee, I think. Anyway, I always enjoy it when she calls. And she says she's been listening for the last 5 years. And she has written this beautiful piece called The Voice of the Unborn. I can't read it all, but it's this. Hello, this is your child, your baby. I'm so much more than a mass of tissue. I'm a growing being, part of you. I can touch, I can feel pain, I can hear your voice, and I can respond to you. I can't wait to learn all about my world. I'm curious. I want to see what you look like and to feel your protective, loving arms around me. I want to grow up and try new things. I want to love and to be loved. Maybe I will be like you. I want to learn my ABCs. I can't wait to read great books and journal my thoughts and feelings. I want to be close to you. That's how it starts. By the way, we'll put this on our Facebook page so that you can read it. She did a great job. Surely that's beautiful. And it fits beautifully into our campaign to have women be able to actually see their little babies growing in them as real people. And that's our preborn campaign. And so for $28, you can provide one ultrasound for one girl or woman who's facing an unexpected, unwanted, difficult pregnancy. And you can do that by calling 877-616-2396. That's 877-616-2396. That's for preborn, and I hope that you'll be generous. This is we have a goal of 2,500 ultrasounds, and I know you guys can do this, so let's do it. 877-616-2396, Sandy Rios, in the morning on AFR Talk.
But whoever hates his brother is in the darkness and walks in the darkness. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. During his speech that signaled the end of recent military actions concerning Iran, President Trump said America is now the number one producer of oil and natural gas anywhere in the world. We are independent and we do not need Middle East oil. America is now a net energy exporting nation for the first time since 1953. Politicians and presidents of all stripes have yearned for energy independence. Now we've achieved it, but the talking snakes don't want you to know it. It's become clear that some hate President Trump more than they love America.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Hi, this is Dan Celia from Financial Issues. We as God's people need to be good stewards of all that He has given us. That is so important, and that's what drives me each day as I break down the latest financial numbers and talk to listeners across the country about their use of the money that God has entrusted to them. Join me each morning from 8 to 10 Central and Saturday mornings at 10 o'clock Central Time for Financial Issues right here on American Family Radio.
Missions is something that can happen anywhere. We're happy when a church backs a missionary family and commits them to service in another country. We're also happy when believers share their faith with friends or family. That's missions.
Pastor Bert Harper of Exploring Missions.
We talk with missionaries from around the world, around the country, or around the neighborhood.
Exploring Missions with Pastor Bert Harper. Saturday evenings at 6:30 and 8:30 Central on American Family Radio.
Everybody needs Jesus.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. There's much debate today about the proper role of women when it comes to the teaching of the Bible. Here's my 2 cents worth. The Apostle Paul says in 1 Timothy 2:12, I do not permit a woman to teach or exercise authority over a man. Here's what Paul seems to be saying. When the church is gathered together for instruction, God has entrusted the responsibility to men to be the ones who open the word to the gathered saints. And he also seems to indicate that the exercise of authority in the church is to be reserved for men. So there are two simple questions we might ask. Does this involve women teaching men? Maybe we shouldn't do it. And does this position involve women exercising authority over men? If the answer is yes, then maybe we shouldn't do that. It may seem antiquated, but remember that the Word of God never goes out of date and it never goes out of style.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Nearly 2 years ago, Communist China's Xi Jinping became its dictator for life. Yesterday, Russia's Vladimir Putin unveiled a scheme that seems designed to secure for him a similar status. Such ominous consolidations of power by America's foes are bad for their own people, as well as ours. Putin cynically dressed up his gambit as a measure to limit the terms his successors might serve. Combined with demanding his entire cabinet's resignation and tapping an unknown as prime minister, President Putin obviously wants to be seen as responding to growing public restiveness with his 2 decades of dominance of the Russian government. The practical effect of Putin's proposed constitutional reforms and a referendum he has announced to endorse them, however, is to defer any succession indefinitely. He will remain president until 2024, then simply continue misruling in some new capacity. This is Frank Gaffney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios back with you. Well, I have an unusual ally, and that's Dana Bash at CNN. This just came in my inbox just a few minutes ago, and this is what she says. We are used to seeing signing ceremonies at moments of celebration, when a president is signing legislation, when even sometimes on rare occasion, but it has happened when the House sends over a landmark piece of legislation. It was unusual to see that kind of ceremony and handing out the pins and smiling for a picture in this kind of situation where the House Speaker has bent over backwards to say publicly and privately that this is somber and no time for celebration. Isn't that interesting? I'm sure you're going to see that today. That's Dana Bash making the same observation I did about the duplicity of Nancy Pelosi and this whole so-called self-described somber sending over of articles of impeachment when she's actually pretty gleeful and signing it with pins with her names on it, multiple pins. All right, I want to go back to some of the email. Actually, this is Facebook. Emery writes often, and Emery, I do read what you write. I just don't often have a chance to respond. But she's responding to our preborn campaign. By the way, our phone number is 877-616-2396. That's 877-616-2396. At this point, we wanted to provide 2,500 ultrasounds to 2,500 different women. We are at 920, so, you know, we need your help. It's $28 for each woman or girl who gets these ultrasounds. And the 40 are so clear that it really shows the babies in beautiful clarity. And that's why 80% of women who have them actually decide to keep their babies. And so if you want to help us, it's 877-616-2396. Okay, so Emery is not does not agree with me on, I think, almost anything. So, and again, we'll engage in maybe call me sometime, Emery, and let's talk on the air. But let me read what she says. I'm guessing the measurement of babies saved will simply be live births, with zero concern for the well-being of the child after the woman who you're actually trying to control is no longer pregnant. If a woman is actively seeking an abortion for whatever her personal reason, she doesn't need anyone shoving an ultrasound in her face. Her body, her choice, period. She is free to make the decision for herself. Now, if a woman wants an ultrasound and can't afford one, good on this fundraiser. But stick your nose in your own business. Emery, let me just tell you that I hear you. And you certainly are making the point that a lot of the people in the general public would say. But I have to tell you, there's been so much research on the effect of abortion on women. And this is the part you may not realize. You know, like when you are a mom, and I don't know if you are or not. I don't even know if you're a girl. I just assumed. I keep assuming because it makes it easier for me to talk. If you were a mom, you tell your kids, you give them instructions about things like brush your teeth every night, you know, don't cross the street when the cars are coming, look both ways, because they are not aware of dangers. And it is in the spirit, for me, of warning young women, especially, and older women, about the results of abortion, not only on the babies. It's enough said that the babies are torn apart. I don't know if you've seen that, Emery. That's the thing that made me pro-life. I was 24. And I opened the drawer at the Berlin Brigade headquarters in Berlin, Germany, just looking for some paper. And I pulled out a brochure, and it was pictures of babies, parts just torn apart, bloody. It was, I just couldn't stand it, honestly. I was, maybe you could. I couldn't. I mean, I was 22, actually. And it was hard, and when I actually saw that, it just grieved me so much that I finally understood what abortion was. Before that, it was just a concept to me. And so not only, of course, does it destroy babies, and we know that they do feel pain. That's why so many bills are being passed that the Unborn Pain Relief Act, something that's close, but it's not quite right, because these babies show signs of pain when they are dismembered. And so I think that's kind of a big deal myself. The other part is we know now from decades of research that women suffer too. Now, there are exceptions. There are women, I think, that are so hard that it doesn't affect them. I found that to be true. My own, because I've been talking about this and working in this area for decades now. But we know that most women have tremendous depression. They have regrets. You should hear the women talking about the regrets that they have. They'll have other children, and then sometimes, and they will experience birth and having a baby, and then they'll realize what they did to their child, their first child usually. And they have regrets, and so do men, by the way. And it causes depression, and the rates of drug usage go up. It has a very detrimental effect on women, and often they just never get over it. And I find that women take one of two courses, and I'm with the exception of those that don't care. They either get really depressed and sad, or and maybe try to they have depression, or they medicate with drugs, or they get really involved in the pro-choice movement and they're angry. I've just been walking down a street carrying a save lives sign or whatever, something very innocuous, and had angry, furious women hissing at me, shout, just furious. And I think they probably had abortions. And this is a reminder that even though it's legal, it's not necessarily moral. And so, Emory, I know you think it's about interfering with a person's choice, because that's part of what you've grown up with. Women have a right. We have rights, 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 rights. But what if there were cars coming and you were walking across the street? Should I not tell you? Should I not warn you? See, I think I should. And I think that you might want to listen. I've been living a long time. I've seen the detrimental effects of this. We've done videos. I've done documentaries on it. You might not have quite all the information you need, but I understand why you say what you say coming from this culture. All right, this is from Gary. He said, abortion is not a political issue. Conservatives constantly use this as an issue to create divide amongst the population. So, Gary, so we're using this whole issue about killing the little ones because we want to make a political point and divide people. What? How about if we just want to save lives and stop? That's even too innocuous. Stop the killing, the dismembering of innocent babies. How about if that's the reason? Because that is the reason. And then he goes on, he says, it's the old us and them routine, claiming to be on some higher moral ground. Well, Gary, if you decide that you don't want to dismember innocent babies, that is a higher moral ground. The thing that you're confusing is that you think it makes us feel superior. And there may be some people who feel that way, but that's not the heart of God. We are on God's moral ground, and that is higher. We speak for Him, those of us that think life is precious. It isn't our idea. We're just as depraved as the rest of the people standing on the ground, where the ground is that level. But when we adapt and embrace God's ways, we do stand on higher moral ground. It doesn't make us better people. Then he goes on to say, they're playing on the sentiments of right-wing religious groups and telling them that if you don't vote conservative, you're a supporter of abortion and you're going to hell. Now, you know what, Gary? I've been in this, as I just described, I've been an official part of the pro-life movement since the mid-80s. And I've never heard anybody say that. I really haven't. I've certainly never said that. I know some Christians who go to church regularly, a lot of Catholic women, Protestant women, who have gone the way of Emory's viewpoint, that it's women's right. And many of them are in churches and sometimes miserable when they really understand the heart of God on the issue of life. But it isn't connected to self. Look, there's nothing you can do, Gary, to earn your right to stand before our God. You cannot be good enough, so you can't be bad enough to stop Him from saving you in terms of spiritually. I don't know. I need more time to explain that, but I'm glad you wrote. And that reminds me then that we are in the middle of this preborn campaign, and there's a reason for that, because we really do want to stop the torturous tearing apart of unborn babies in the womb. We think their lives are precious. We think they have souls that are separate from their mothers. We don't believe that mothers have that right to terminate their babies' lives, whatever the reason. And Emory, you said that we don't care about children after the womb. That's not true. That's an uninformed. That's a good talking point that you've read, and it surely would make sense, wouldn't it, if Christians didn't care about babies after they were born? But it's not true. Crisis pregnancy centers follow the babies, the husbands, and the husbands. They're not always married. Often not married. The dads and the moms for a long time, and they do provide for them, care for the babies. I mean, they help them with practical things like baby beds and supplies and all of that. And then, of course, you know that probably there's no group of people that have provided more orphanages for unwanted children than the Christian community, whether they're Protestant or Catholic. Throughout the millennial, or since the time of after Jesus, that's what Christians have been doing. And then Christians are huge into adoption and caring for unwanted babies. So you're wrong about that, just to make that point. Our phone number is 877-616-2396, 877-616-2396. I was going to open the phone lines. I apologize to you. I just I haven't been able to do that. And if I do it now, it'll just be frustrating. So I'm not going to. But if you can help us, we have raised enough money to provide for 920 ultrasounds of 2,500. So we need some help, and I hope that you will help us. It's $28 for each ultrasound, and just give as generously as you're able. If you're just able to give $28 today, you know, God knows and sees your heart, and so give us a call, 877-616-2396. That's 877-616-2396. This is sent to me by Prissy. Prissy's been listening for a long time. Prissy is blind, and she used to be a teacher, and she always sends such wonderful things. And, of course, I can't always respond to them on the air. All of you know that. And, by the way, I was thinking of our friend who just sent that poem, Shirley. I can't – would you do me a favor and not all of you send me things that you've written – and hoping that I'll put them on Facebook. That's, I think, the first time I've ever done that. One of the first times. I thought that was exceptional. And I can't. I do not have the capacity to take in all of your creative thoughts. I just wish I did. But just a warning, because I don't want to hurt you. That's the reason I say that. I don't want to disappoint you, because I can't respond and embellish or undergird or give air to your creative gifts. But anyway, this is from Prissy, and she sent me a couple of pictures. And they're wonderful. They were especially good this morning for me. It's a quote. It shows a window in an empty room, but a window looking outside. And it says, "If I really want an unrushed life, I must underwhelm my schedule so God has room to overwhelm my soul. If I really want an unrushed life, I must underwhelm my schedule so God has room to overwhelm my soul." I love that. And then she sent and added a second one. And this was especially good for me today, because I had a very short night last night. And so it was a challenge. Do you ever, any of you like this, where I wake up, if I go to sleep and then I wake up, my mind starts to work and forget it. There's no more sleep after that. And it doesn't matter what it is. It can be something ridiculous. Last night I dreamed that I was asked to be a part of this like Broadway show. It wasn't in New York. I'm just giving you the idea. And I had a significant part, and they'd sent me the music, and I had rehearsed. And then I was now actually getting to the first time on stage with all the other actors, and they're all pros, and they're wonderful. I hear them. And then I remember I never did really quite finish preparing. Like, I didn't have anything memorized, and I wasn't even quite sure what all the songs were that I was supposed to sing. And so I woke up in a terrible sweat, because I was so mortified. I was telling people, "You know, this is not like me. You know, I really work hard. I'm always prepared, but I can't do this. I'm going to go up on that stage and make a fool out of myself. And please," it was a terrible dream. So I didn't get a lot of sleep. So this was beautiful. She sent, Prissy sent this. "Sleep doesn't give rest to the soul. Only God does that." I love that. "Sleep doesn't give rest to the soul. Only God does that." We should put this on our Facebook page too, Adam, because these are so beautiful. And Prissy, thank you for sending those. Very meaningful. All right, so this is a Thursday night. We have a lot going on. The Chief Justice will be going into the Senate chamber today, swearing in all of those senators. And they will, I'm not sure, they'll probably read, the House managers led by Adam Schiff will go in. And when the trial begins, I think they won't present their case until next Tuesday. So the issue is whether they will call witnesses or not. And if they do call witnesses, it could turn into a circus. And I think we're in danger. I've said that from the very beginning. I don't like it. I think it's a dangerous proposition for the president and for the truth. So there's those things happening. Also, there's a big march in Richmond, Virginia on Monday about the fact that the new regime in Virginia wants to take away gun rights. And so you might want to look that up. I haven't had a chance to say much about that. The Virginia legislature passed the Equal Rights Amendment last night, too. But it's not going to go anywhere, because it expired in 1984, I think it was. Preborn number is 877-616-2396, 877-616-2396. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.